My name is Fukuyu, a representative of the major Japanese soda company. The name does not really translate to English, but loosely, we are the cow of the national turnip. Like I said, does not really translate. We have partnered with the giant-sized team-up network through the glorious leader Charles McFarr. We present a new soda lineup for their network. A Birched, a D&D podcast, is a birch beer without the birch. It tastes like your American Pabst Blue Ribbon, but now for all ages. A Blazing Defender Report is a cinnamon, cayenne, pepper, lemon soda. Spicy, sweet, and sour, every can comes with a colorful comic book character on each can. Geek Versus is sold only in 6-pack or more. Each can is a mystery soda. Go to the website and give your feedback on which soda you hate least to receive 7 points. Breaking the Panel is a sugar-free version of your Crystal Pepsi. Like the show, no sweetness, but all of the hate and disinterest. Toy Power is a grape soda we made in the 1970s and lost in a warehouse. Recently rediscovered, we have repurposed it for your consumption. Just as useless as back then, but fun to correct. FTH Beyond is a candy cora. When you pop it up, it opens a container of extra strength pop rocks. When you drink it, it causes massive internal injuries. Like the game, it tries to ruin your enjoyment of it. Pokemon Go Podcast is a fruit-flavored soda in 3 flavors. Pineapple, a banana, and a raspberry. Each soda is filled with bits of real endangered animals, so you feel like you could really collect them all. And for the Great Emperor, we have Chicken Wing Soda, a blend of 11 herbs and spices in a pure white can. Each purchase comes with a complimentary Tiki Torch. Please head to www.giantsizeteamup.com to buy your soda or face the disappointment of your ancestors and Princess Christopher Wisdom.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we do all the cool stuff, and sometimes we have to dig deep for that booger in the back for the good news. But we'll go for it. That's what Phil's here for. I'm the right guy on a podcasting, Charles McFall, riding shotgun, the man, the myth, and the legend, Soapbox Klotz. Heyo! And the not the wisdom, Philip Keating.
Hey, yo.
I gotta say, I've been listening to Bosch. I stay behind, but I was listening to the Patreon episode where apparently I'm a playable character, more or less. That's the dumbest version of me y'all have ever done. Atlanta was better than that.
Hey, man, here's the thing. So we have a Patreon episode about a bunch of Ghostbusters from Georgia. And one of our hosts decides to play Charles McFall.
No.
Who's no.
Who's he play? Who's he play?
Oh,
Chaz McPhail.
McPhail.
Yeah.
And so the only interaction he ever had with you is when you brought us onto the network.
Right, because he wouldn't get out of the goddamn magic room.
When you first brought us onto the network, you interviewed us via Skype.
Yeah.
And he was blackout drunk, and you were just eating chicken wings the whole time.
Yeah. So I was starving. It was a long story.
So
yeah.
That's the only thing he has to go off of. So it's just the rock god of... I don't know, douchebag, and then just chicken wings.
Where's your voice?
The rock got a flavor
sound. He's got 2 pillowcases full of chicken wings.
They're 3. He's got 3 bags full.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I didn't make it. It's not my kid.
3 bags full.
So, if y'all want to hear that, go be a patron at Bosch and check it out, because I'm gonna make him so uncomfortable.
Be a patron at Breaking the Panel. Patreon.com/Breaking the Panel.
That's right.
Hey, why don't you do both?
Yeah. Or both.
Like Phil. All right. We actually have a bunch of emails tonight. So we're going to do one in the first half, one in the second half. The rest will just have to wait. But we've got Agent 00 server, faithful player from the MAA days and part of your FTH3 Alliance group, reporting from San Diego. Sorry, it's a week. Been a week late, but I'm catching up a podcast regarding the two-star group shards. Actually, this is probably more of a FTH one, but we'll do it here too. That's just all. This is all.
That's the wrong email.
That sounds
like an email for the other show.
So we'll use that on the show. Well, actually, we will. You guys will use that on the show tomorrow. So, all right. Never mind. Fuck you, man. We don't want that shit.
Wow, that's not a way to thank someone who doesn't listen.
I'm gonna be doing something else tomorrow, and I'll get to respond to the email. So, it's cool.
I'll remind them that you said "fuck you, man."
Yeah, you
we don't
that.
Want that shit.
Don't want no shit. Have you guys thank finished? You. Have you watched Luke Cage? Finished?
No.
It?
I
your
slept
job,
through,
Phil.
I slept through most of Luke Cage.
Whew.
Not because it was bad, but because it was right after I saw Hereditary and I needed something on at night to.
<Not die.
laughs> Yeah. If you've seen that movie, going to bed is really awkward. After you've seen that movie.
Okay. I actually have not.
I'm just going to put it that way. Let's just say that I was peeping the corners, if anybody gets that. Anyways, the point is...
Dirty.
I've caught bits and pieces of it. I intend to sit down and go through it all again. It seemed cool. I've seen people really praising the new villain.
Yes. The villain was spectacular, man.
So
he was good. He was really good.
I've also shockingly seen at least one person praising Iron Fist's return to the back half.
So that's why I brought it up, because we are getting Iron Fist season 2, which I never wanted and didn't need. But here's the thing. Iron Fist shows up, I'd say the middle half. It's kind of about that point where they do the Netflix fluff of 4 or 5 episodes. And the way they did his character, because I saw some by spoilers, like, oh, this, you know, this actually redeemed Iron Fist for me. Like, we'll see. My wife and I both watched it, and we're like, okay, they're toning him down. He's more quiet strength, although he actually uses the words quiet strength a lot. But he's actually doing it. He's got a better haircut. He handles himself better. The fight scenes had way more training to work on, right?
But it's really the haircut that brings the whole thing together.
It is. It totally
Finn
is.
Jones
honestly.
Has probably been doing kung fu nonstop for 2 years now.
Right?
Some fat nerds on the internet are going to talk shit about this. I'm the Fist of Kun Lun.
That's the thing. He's breaking boards that just have Twitter posts on them about how bad season 1 was.
And the Defenders.
And then Colleen Wing walks in and is like, board not hit back.
Yeah. Oh, man. Colleen Wing, her brief appearance in Luke Cage was very excellent. Very cool.
I'm excited.
So, yeah. So Danny makes an appearance. He's better. But let's talk about the season 2 that is coming up. And Netflix... Well, not nearly Netflix. Marvel Iron Fist, the official account. So somebody, it's up on IMDb. Somebody was looking through it and tweeted out. So there's only going to be 10 episodes this season instead of the standard Netflix 13. And the official Marvel Iron Fist responded, "We got a smart one here." So it does look like Marvel's going to be tooling down the number of episodes to 10 going forward. I know, I'm with you. And on Patreon, you can see the face that Klaus has made. If you listen to the podcast, you can't see the ultimate joy that he just shared in his silent exclamation. Nobody needs that in their headphones. Nobody needs that in their headphones. I don't care how much you pay her. Nobody needs that in their headphones. So, but it is. Well, I can't read that line because of what you guys just did. But it's been a while.
Go on.
Yeah. No. I'm moving forward. Moving forward.
Read it.
So we've all said they could take those middle episodes, cut the crap in half, jam it to good parts together, and you have a solid season, as long as it's written well, unlike Iron Fist 1.
You don't. Okay. My hot take, real quick.
Yeah.
You don't need filler.
No.
In these Netflix shows. Yeah. So the appeal of filler on a normal show is so that you can sell ad space, right? You stretch the story out over like 16 or 20 or 24 episodes, and that's that many weeks of the year you have people showing up to watch the ads that you attach to that show, right? Netflix doesn't have that model. They gain nothing by spending a lot of extra money for episodes that don't mean anything.
Yeah.
I think this is a smart play.
I agree. And one of the lines here says, 13 episodes may feel slow at times, but it does give the writers room, more freedom to include everything we love about these characters instead of having to pick and choose. Bullshit, man. Have you watched one of these seasons before you wrote this article? Because Jesus Christ.
No. That's why you can, if you produce one good season, well, then guess what? You get renewed for another season where you can then expand on characters in your world around you. Look, talking about ad space, Paul, you have a show like Game of Thrones. They don't get ad space.
Right.
Since season one, they've been doing 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm. And actually, they now they're going to 8 or 4. I mean, they're even shortening it up now.
The last season had 7, but we're not. We could have used 3 more episodes.
Oh yeah, we could. But they're going to be doing an hour and a half episodes for like 8 episodes.
But what I'm trying to say is like they haven't learned in that came out in 2011. They haven't learned in 7 years that for a premium service, 10 episodes is perfect.
Yeah,
right.
It's perfect. I mean, so.
I've seen every bit of Game of Thrones. I cannot think of one time where I went, this is just filler. Move on. Give me a whole
episode.
That
whole last season. I'm sorry, what?
What? Okay.
To be fair, the last season gets some fair criticism because they went off book because they ran out of book. Okay? And it's a little weak. It's a lot of flash and not so much substance that it used to have. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. But it's still not. I didn't dig it.
I dug it.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely not as character driven as the prior seasons were. Take forever to build up to your big action pieces, and you would get all that character play before you got there.
And it was good character play. But even Daredevil season 1 and 2, I loved them both. Both seasons had middle filler episodes, at least 1 or 2 that you could have just cut in half and put the good stuff together, and had one good episode. And so this season of Luke Cage, honestly, 4 or 5. Jessica Jones, 4 or 5. I mean, it really drug out in the middle of both of those.
I did catch up on Jessica Jones, and they could have tightened that up to a solid 10 and been in pretty good position.
Jessica Jones, I finished that series because I'm a completionist when it comes to the Marvel series, and I was like, I've got to get to the end. But I didn't enjoy it. And they finally wrapped it up and did okay, but it was only okay. It was like really.
It took a while to get to where it needed to go. That could have been done in like 3 episodes.
So were both of those shows, I'm guessing, are 13 to 15 episode series?
Probably 13, yeah.
Okay. So then maybe they're using Iron Fist as, you know, a trial run to see how this is, you know, with a 10 episode format, and then moves it across the board for every show.
Well, so the other thing about Iron Fist Season 2, though, my understanding is this is probably where we're going to see Daughters of the Dragon really come together, too.
Well, so, I can give you the titles of the episodes if that helps you.
Well, no, don't do that. I'm just saying that basically the expectation here is that we're going to see Misty and Colleen come together and start really being the dynamic duo that they're known from the comics. And so the speculation is that this is going to happen in Iron Fist Season 2. You know, so I suspect that that's what we'll see, which means that 10 episodes, a tighter episode schedule, on top of adding in more content with another, like, you know, another almost show's worth of character. Not show, but you know what I mean?
Like sure.
A storyline, a major storyline that matters, that's interwoven with Iron Fist. I think there's a lot of potential there.
I agree. And, you know, they can't do much worse than they did in season one, you know, on let's say, a fan, you know, fanfare. They can't do much worse. So, you know, why not take a little chance and a little risk? I mean, this only comes out, you know, September 7th. So,
honestly, the thing, right after we get back from Dragon Con,
yes. That'll
be excellent. The thing about it is, you're right. They couldn't have done much. If season one had been tighter and was less full of the garbage that it was full of, people probably would have had an overall more positive perspective on it.
Yeah.
But it when something is really dragging, it sucks to get through the filler.
Sure.
And that's, Yeah, go ahead.
And I've heard a lot of people come back recently, you know, after all the dust has settled and watched it and been like, it's an all right series. You know what I think really went wrong with it is like they just came out punching so hard with Daredevil and then Jessica Jones. And then they had to stumble at some point, and unfortunately they had to stumble with Iron Fist season one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But now that the dust has settled and Defenders really was okay, and people said Jessica Jones 2 is okay. So going back and watching Iron Fist 1, they're like, oh, yeah, all right, this is, you know, the sting is a little bit less than week one when it first came out.
Yeah, because Jessica Jones season 2 had, it has some moments, some really incredible moments.
Yeah.
But then it's just interspaced with so much filler that is just
and too much side character business. I mean, what to me what made Jessica Jones season one great was we followed her and her story and her drama. This became more of a she was the set piece that everything else we watched around her. And I just kind of got tired. I liked the noir part. I mean, it was okay with the voiceover and stuff. It wasn't like, oh, my favorite, but I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I see where you're going. That's cool.
So but are you saying – well, I don't want to really get into it. Are you saying the side story with Malcolm and
Patty and the other character?
Hogarth, all of that stuff you didn't really care for?
Not as many episodes. I like the Hogarth stuff. It just drug out too much. Patty's drug out too much, you know?
Malcolm's really great, like drug out too much. The big reveal mid-season and then who that is the second half of the season, all of that stuff with Jessica was way too dragged out.
Exactly. It wasn't that it was there. I loved that it was there. It was just you took a sandwich and just put a whole lot of bread in the middle to make it look like a big sandwich when it really wasn't.
Right.
That's all.
You know, the other thing is, so I, this is related, I promise.
Okay.
I just recently finished Sense8. And so those of you who don't know the story about Sense8, Sense8 got two seasons. At the beginning of season two, they had a holiday special, so it was an extra long episode. I think it was an hour and a half rather than an hour or whatever. Or maybe it was a whole, it was a 2 hour episode, actually, now that I think about it. So season one ends, they get the 2 hour episode for a Christmas special or New Year's special, however you want to put it. And then they got the second season, but they got canceled while the second season, you know, after the second season came out. However, the fan outcry about the cancellation was sufficient that Netflix was like, okay, we'll let you finish the series and you're going to do it as basically a 2.5 hour movie. That 2.5 hour movie, when you watch that, if you've been following the show from the beginning, you suddenly see that the blueprint is there for two more seasons, at least, if not three. And you just see that somebody took this plan, you know, the storyboards, and they're like, let's just cut out all of the filler stuff that we would normally slow this plot down with, because we're trying to fill out the world and we're trying to fill out time, if we're honest, which is fine to an extent. And I actually really valued it with Sense8 because Sense8 is such a character-driven show and it's really about representing different perspectives. And so it's not just the sci-fi core story that matters. It's about exploring humanity and people coming from different backgrounds and people.
What the Wachowskis are good at.
Right. And there's eight central characters and they took a lot of time to really go through each individual character's life in a really meaningful way. They kind of skipped a little bit with a couple of the characters where they kind of merged their two characters in particular. They merged their story together. But anyways, my point is the 2.5 hour movie had all of the signs of being a condensed version, like a fan edit, basically, of what season 3 and 4 and possibly even 5 would have looked like. But that was so fucking refreshing.
Yeah.
Even though I was so sad, and they still had time to have this amazing wedding scene at the end. After all the drama was finished, they had this beautiful wedding scene, and they still had time at different points to explore different beautiful moments. It's one of the things that Sense8 does really well, is when one of the characters has a major personal victory, they turn it into this huge celebration, and they take a few minutes to just really make it this big spectacle, which most shows don't bother doing. And so the point I'm making here, and I'll acknowledge Sense8's not for everyone. You know, buyer beware. There's a lot of gay, trans, and everything in between sex. If that makes you uncomfortable, don't watch it. But if you're fine with that stuff, it's a beautiful thing. what I will say, though, is it was refreshing to see it condensed. And I think it was great to see a show that would have gotten canceled and we would have just been left holding the bag otherwise get a satisfactory resolution, even though you could tell that it was rushed and that they had to cut a whole bunch of the in-between. That being said, I think if you're forward planning for that and you start plotting out these Netflix shows where you're looking at 10 episodes rather than anything more than that, or if you even look at like 10 episodes and say, all right, the last episode is going to be a 2-hour episode or something like that. It's going to be our big finale. It's going to be bombastic. You know what I mean? It's going to be like, oh, we're going to resolve the storyline. We're going to set up the next storyline. We're going to have character stuff in the, you know, we're going to do everything in that last hour or 2 hours. I think that's fine. That could almost be a new format for streaming shows because I think the audience can absorb that. You know, I think the audience is fine with the idea of I'm going to have a show that I can watch for an hour at a time up until this big finale and just finish the season, because that's not all that different from traditional serialized television like Star Trek, for example.
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek had a couple of dual episodes where you had 2-hour-long episodes that were linked together. They were often, you know, episode A was at the end of this season and at the beginning of the next season was episode B. But the point is you could take time to really dig into an idea, flesh it out, and take time on the parts that really matter. But the middle doesn't have to be fat. You know what I mean? You can just flow right along and get there.
And what I love about it, even though I haven't seen the series, is that you got the ending and you got a completed show as opposed to, and that is a thing that Netflix didn't have to do, but it absolutely is keyed into being able to do is, well, we canceled it, which I always, because you don't sell ads on Netflix. I'm wondering what makes a show go on versus canceling it on Netflix. And they're kind of close to the vest about that, I think. But so you got canceled, but we're going to let you finish your story. And if that doesn't make it the most perfect Netflix thing ever, I don't know what is. Because it's great that you're able to do that and get your resolutions.
My understanding is one of the big issues with Sense8 was they shot on location a lot. So the show was really expensive to make.
Okay.
It also had a principal cast of 8 people. You know what I mean? So there are 8 central characters and a number of really important supporting characters. So there's easily 10 to 12 people who were in every single episode, you know, and were very important to the story pretty much no matter what. So I think that matters. And also, like I said, some of those set pieces that they did, like one of the things they had a parade, gay pride parade in Brazil.
Okay.
One of the characters goes to it to speak there because he's a gay man. And, it was, I don't know if they just filmed it at an actual gay pride parade or if they recreated that for themselves. You know what I mean? Cause I know, one of the Bond films that has has Carnival where Bond's walking through Carnival. They just filmed that at Carnival is my understanding. Like they got a street of it where they were allowed to film that, you know, while they were there. And you know, people going into it, I think knew what it was, that it was going to be a movie, an action movie or whatever. But basically the idea was they couldn't recreate all of that because it would be way too expensive. So I don't know, but there's some huge set pieces, some beautiful moments that are like, you can tell that a lot of money went into that. Like it took a lot of time and effort and money to make that thing happen. So in that case, I think it was just a really expensive show and the audience is a little bit narrow. You know what I mean? It definitely turns off a certain set. But in the same way, I think you face the same thing with these Marvel shows because a lot of the criticism, you know, is Jessica Jones, for example. People have talked about how, well, I don't like Jessica Jones because it doesn't speak to them because maybe they don't care about psychological thrillers. Other people, you know, someone who is completely fucking in love with Jessica Jones might not care for all or care at all for Iron Fist because it's a kung fu show, you know, like, and they're like, well, fuck that. I'm not into that. I'm into the psychological stuff. And the same thing. I mean, even people who aren't racist have said, I didn't really like Luke Cage because I didn't get it because they didn't identify with the black experience, the black American experience.
The Harlem experience, yeah.
Right, yeah, the Harlem. Well, I mean, but you could, Luke Cage could have been done in South Central. You know what I mean? It could have been a similar story. Not to say that I want to displace Luke Cage because he's a New Yorker, you know, up and down. But, yeah. So the thing is, even within that, these Marvel shows, as broadly appealing as Marvel happens to be, these street level heroes do have relatively niche appeal in some cases. So it's a whole thing.
Yeah. I don't really know how to follow it up because it's so well said. It's like, all right, everybody, pass the plate. We're done with the show. Thanks for coming. Yeah. You know, this is awesome, man. And we need to see more of that in our Marvel universes on Netflix. Because it is two separate universes. I mean, not literally, but it feels like two separate universes.
No, it is.
Cinematic. I mean, technically, blah, blah, blah. So, like, yeah. Daredevil headlines have shown up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, of course, Coulson is actually returning to the big screen here in the next film, I believe.
Right.
So, or maybe it's in Marvel, Miss Marvel, because this is a 1990s throwback, whatever. But he's returning to the big screen cinematic universe.
Are they going
to
give him hair?
Probably.
Yep.
Big hair. But you know, on the back of Sense8, this actually fits very well. Marvel is saying that we're going to see more LGBTQ representation in the years ahead. Kevin Feige recently said that there are more LGBTQ characters in the works and or are already on screen, but now fans have a bit more concrete confirmation to go by. Steven Brassard, who's been working on the movie since The Incredible Hulk, dropped some behind-the-scenes knowledge. I'm going to skip the stuff about Captain America because it doesn't apply to any of this stuff.
There was some speculation for a while that Cap and Bucky...
Well, I mean, it's not referring to that at all. It's just talking about they were going to skip the first
There are a lot
film.
Of people calling for it. And honestly, yeah. I think it would have been a brave decision.
I understand why they didn't.
Damn.
Because...
No, yeah,
Liberal-ass lib cucks down in Hollyweird is going to make my Captain America.
God,
okay?
do you remember when Travis came on after that first issue that Cap said, Hail Hydra? And how he lost his shit. Can you imagine? I mean, Travis is one of the most accepting people I know in the South. I will say in the South.
Yeah,
I love my bro. He will say some shit. But he loves people. He's a true-to-heart firefighter. He saves all. He protects all. But he's very protective of his properties. And when they fucking took a hot second to make Captain America Hydra, I thought he was going to burn the world down. So can you imagine having him and Bucky hook up on screen with no previous
It's that first time during Infinity War when they see each other for the first time in a long time and they just
Love
embrace.
You.
I just can't quit you.
No, but this is cool. I mean, the X-Men have always been about, mismatched characters who don't feel like they belong in this world and coming together and growing stronger together. And there's been a lot of, gay, lesbian, bi, trans X-Men throughout the years. And I just really hope that this means we have a North Star or an Alpha Flight coming. That's all, you know, when I hear that, I just think of Alpha Flight.
We don't need any more Canadians.
Fuck off.
You don't have to apologize after telling me to fuck off, sir.
But no. What Broussard says, I know it can be frustrating if you're part of a group that wants to see more representation, and the answer is always stay tuned. I can imagine that's frustrating, but that is happening behind the scenes. You're going to be seeing that more and more representation, he means. Representation across individual groups in the years ahead. Come on, quit slow rolling it, Marvel. It's fucking 2018. What the shit, man?
Yeah. Well, they're trying to. If it's done poorly,
yeah,
it can do more harm than good.
Sure.
Which is the chief argument. If you just shoehorn someone in as gay, it's going to be like Kevin Spacey after the accusation. I choose to live my life as a gay man. That it's going to feel forced and awkward and like nobody cares. What I mean? Especially troubling to the people who it represents because they're like, whoa, hold up. Fuck you. That's not my story. Like,
how'd you feel about Deadpool 2?
You know what was great about Deadpool 2? Well,
okay. Everything, but yeah.
A lot of things. Yeah. Well, the relationship in Deadpool 2 wasn't like... They didn't make a big deal out of it. I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
It's way You know what I mean? But he cracked a joke, but that was it. You know what I mean? Like, and then it was over with. That's exactly how it needs to be presented. That's exactly how Marvel, because I'll tell you, I really feel like it often annoys people who want to be represented when they're made the pony show. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, let's trot out the fact that you're our token gay character or our token, just anything on the LGBTQ category. You know, like, oh, you're our token, this character. That's fucked up. You know what I mean? It's rude and it's insulting and it doesn't help. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the joke he made was the perfect joke. Cause he's like, whoa, you're dating, you have somebody and she started on the hates, you know, how you be a hater and, you know, basically the chip on the shoulder speech. And I love to say, pump the hate break or pump the brakes on the hate train. I just meant somebody would date you. You know, and it was great. And then, like you said, they just moved on. But we're so far behind England and TV. I don't know if either of you guys ever heard of a English show called Jekyll. It was just called Jekyll. Yeah. And it's a mini series that they did that I really loved.
For you to say something in name like Downton Abbey or...
Yeah. Yeah,
no, this is...
Flying...
Oh, have you ever heard of the Great British Bake Off?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, look at Phil. Phil's like, don't you talk about my bake-off. No, I love the bake-off, man. I'm with you. It came to Sci-Fi briefly. It aired on Sci-Fi in the U.S. before it became SIFI. And it was a miniseries that the BBC One, I think, did. And what I'm bringing it up for is, besides the fact that it's a really great, in my opinion, a great sci-fi mind fuck, there was a gay couple in there that you never knew they were gay until the very end, and they kissed each other. Even the main character didn't know. Nobody said a thing. Nobody batted an eye. Nobody cared. And that was when I realized, wow, as America, we're really fucking behind, because they've been showing almost every couple, it seems like, on the BBC's interracial couples, and now you have the gay couples, and nobody. And again, it's just normality, right? It's just the way. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is back in. I think it was in the early 2000s when this thing came out. So I was like, we've got a long way to come. And we think we're progressive now.
No,
we ain't.
No, nobody thinks that.
No, I bet you there. I bet you that voice you did, that's a really horrible Southern accent.
Hey, it's a horrible Southern accent.
I bet you some of those people think we've progressed a lot.
I might just send an email. Mail to somebody.
Yeah, sing it clearly for us, Dixie. Come on, let's go. Jesus.
But no, we're
real educated down here. Fuck you, Daddy and us.
You know what? I consider myself an Atlantean, which is not Georgian, really. It's two different worlds, man. Inside the city, it's a metropolis.
You're an Atlantean?
Number 11, bitch. Anyway, fuck you. I had a good story. I liked it. We need more. Stop slow rolling us, Marvel.
Well,
and Fox even beat him to the punch. Come on.
Yeah, but okay. So obviously, with Marvel being owned by Disney now.
Actually went through, right? That's something we skated over. We didn't really touch on tonight.
Yeah,
it's official now.
Well, yeah, no, that's the Fox deal. But I'm talking about but Marvel proper being owned by Disney. Ultimately, Disney has to be super cautious about everything, and they need to pick the right times.
Which that being is said, though, bullshit, because they're the ones who led the ball game. And hey, we're going to give gay couples who can't get married insurance, because fuck the laws. I mean, the laws didn't say they couldn't do insurance, but fuck the laws about being married. And they led that charge. And I'm talking about in the late 90s or 2000s, they did that.
Sure. Well, but what I'm saying is all eyes are on them, right? We're going to talk about this in a few minutes after we do our ad break, but the James Gunn situation we talked about last week, a lot of why that happened and the way it went down, the way it did is because all eyes are on them. And the conservative, the conservative factions of this country look for any opportunity to chip away at a public entity, whether it be a company or a person, on the issues of morality. And there's many people in this country who still think that your sexuality is a moral issue. You know what I mean? If you're if you're a same-sex person or anything on the spectrum of LGBTQ, not the other spectrum. Yeah. And so you have to be careful – with how you approach that when you are the biggest company. You're the biggest entertainment company now. Let's be real. Let's talk, you know, you're the big wig.
Yeah.
You want to do it right. You want to do it respectfully. And you want to do it from a position where you cannot be challenged, right? You want to put a character or a relationship out there and be like, this is what it is, and you cannot pick this apart. You want to get the support of the LGBTQ community. You want them all behind you. You know, they want to see – you want them to see that company as an ally, you know? And you want everybody to feel like it was a true and fair representation. And if you shoehorn it in, you will get called out. And that's the biggest thing Disney has to avoid, is you cannot afford to get called out when you're the, you know, the biggest there, because then you lose any chance to make it a, you know, to normalize it. And that is the goal, right? Is to normalize the myriad of ways people care about each other and just make it okay. But you know, to speak to that, Nickelodeon did that years ago with Legend of Korra, you know, the sequel series to Avatar, right. The Last Airbender, the main character, the Avatar, is a girl who's in a relationship with a girl, and you got to see them fall for each other in the show, and it was a beautiful thing, and they did it right. And Korra is a gay icon, you know, like a lesbian icon, because it wasn't a characterization, you know, like a stereotype or anything right. like that. It was just, this is a character who, and then she falls for a girl, and there you are. And it was a beautiful thing, and it was really well done. And that's pretty brave. That was Nickelodeon. Nick-a-fuck-a-lodeon, you know?
That sounds like his actual title, Nick-a-fuck-a-lodeon.
Yeah. I like to interject fucking at just about everything. But yeah, so that's my whole thing, is basically like Disney just has to be real careful. They have to approach it and just be like, when we do this, we do it perfectly. And we nail this, and people feel like it represents them. And people who are outside that group feel like it's fair, and that they're not just having it thrust at them either. Because that's the other thing. If you go on the attack and try to force it on yeah. the people who have reservations, you don't win them over that way. You have to present it as a normal thing. Another franchise that did it beautifully was the Kelvin versus Star Trek movies, you know, with Sulu. You know, Sulu's gay. He's in a gay relationship. He goes and kisses his husband, and they have a child. And it's not made – it's just shown briefly. It's not a huge deal. Is not made of it. He doesn't talk about it. You know what I mean? The whole rest of that movie.
Even the new Discovery with that the couple. The high-powered, smart, intelligent, beautiful couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That, so. Yeah. I'm going to take the counter. I agree with you. So I want to take the counterpoint because my style is just a little different and say, fucking rip the Band-Aid off. I agree, no forcing it. But Jesus Christ, why would you have to force it in this day and age? We just listed off a handful of great, well-done ways that it has been handled on TV. Disney, you should be leading this charge, not slow rolling it behind the scenes. And I'm not saying make Captain America gay, because I really think that will make problems.
Right.
I mean, I think you can lean into it in the long run, but you can't just jump on. You can't jump on the main character. Do you like Deadpool did? Bring in a side character, and there's a thing. Bring in, we got, you already have the relationship there. I was going to say Scarlet Witch, but she's Vision and her are still pulling that together. I was going to say before Vision was really introduced.
Why the fuck isn't anybody upset about that fucked up relationship? That is ungodly.
Yeah, Android.
A woman alone.
And a witch.
Sexuality is with a sin, brother.
With a bionic man?
My point exactly, y'all.
Heathenry.
So, here's some more fucked up heathenry. Movie Pass. What the fuck is going on, man? So last Thursday.
Do you wanna live forever? Yeah.
I expected a so long and thanks for all the fish email from them because Jesus Christ. So last Thursday, as of this recording is last Thursday. So July 26th. I found out Friday morning because somebody posted it in one of our Discord groups, somebody threw up for me. And I read the article first thing in the morning. And on July 26th, MoviePass had a quotey fingers outage. And what that means is their credit card processor, the person that backs their cards, said, fuck you, we're shutting you down because you're not paying your bill. Yeah. To the tune, the bill is $5 million. You got six?
I think it's six.
Well, I went with five because they borrowed five. So I don't know.
I ain't saying they're a gold digger.
They ain't messing with no broke.
Go
bro.
On.
Yeah, but they ain't messing with no broke.
Movie pass and users.
Yeah. That was pretty brutal.
No shit, man. They had to do an emergency $5 million to get the service back up and running. Then this beautiful thing came out on July 31st. I'm just going to read it, the important parts. I'm not going to read the bullshit. I'm going to apologize. But dear MoviePass members, and they go, blah, 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 blah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Over the last.
Jig us up, motherfuckers!
That's what I expected. I expected to like, we're sorry to say that this hasn't worked. Now, over the last several days, we've been going to make.
They pull their mask off and it's just Fox Net the whole time.
What would it if it wasn't for you greedy motherfuckers going to see every movie under the sun?
Yeah. We said it was unlimited. We didn't fucking mean you're supposed to use it, you goddamn cocksuckers. But over the last several days, we've begun making changes to our service that will help us continue to offer our members a high-value, low-cost in-theater movie experience. We believe, blah, 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 they believe that they're going to last, is what they're saying. We're the fastest-growing subscription company in history with more than 3 million members, and we've revolutionized the industry. Yeah. Look, credit.
And when 3 million motherfuckers give you $10 a month?
Oh, yeah. Unless you're
$10 a month and then watch 15 fucking. I'm exaggerating, yeah. But.
No,
watch
you
a movie can, every goddamn day.
Yeah. Supposedly, it's what you can do. And some people, like Joe Ard, got it for $6.99 a month because they did a year at a time. They got a special deal. So.
He is not going to get full fulfillment on that.
No, he won't. But it says we've revolutionized the movie industry. The first half of 2018 saw the total box office grow by almost 10% compared to last year. And we know MoviePass is responsible for a significant portion of that unprecedented growth.
Yeah, because you're giving that shit away for free.
For free, bitch. Did your mama never tell you they're not going to buy the cow if they get the milk for free?
MoviePass. You are the stimulus package, okay?
Yeah. So
you inserted your package into the industry and stimulated around for a while,
and you lasted all of 5 seconds, bitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Like, MoviePass is going to go down in history for being the ultimate Minuteman company.
Yeah.
Like, oh boy.
I'll be shocked. I'll be shocked if they turn anything around here. But here's so I have. Has everybody seen Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail?
No,
I didn't think.
What the fuck is that? That sounds like some weird shit.
I fucking hate both of you right now, Phil. I believe you're a cocksucker. Anyway, imagine any war movie you see where they're all shut up. Like, Lieutenant Dan, where are your legs? So the legs are blown off. The arms are blown off. They're bleeding to death. They got their guts hanging out. And here's how they're going to have somebody take, you know, a Band-Aid and try to put it over one of the bullet holes. This is their Band-Aids. So here's their, in order to continue our service, maintaining a high level of financial discipline, we need to make some modifications. We're going to reduce availability We must reduce availability for big new release titles such as Mission Impossible, Fallout, and other popular new releases, at least for a while as we adjust the business model. I'm reading from the fucking email. This is what they're saying. We're working on making this more clear in the app so you know which titles are available. So now, not only is it not, I'm so waiting for that class action lawsuit because you sold me a product that was unlimited one-a-day movies.
So here's the thing, though. A class action lawsuit only does any good if the company has any money to give you.
I mean, their parent company has money. So you're right. So so basically now they get to pick and choose what movies I see. Showtimes, this is another Band-Aid. Showtimes that are offered through our service will vary from day to day, and every Showtime may not be available. We encourage you to check the MoviePass app for showtimes before you leave for the theater. Third Band-Aid. It's not a Band-Aid. It's an admittance that their customer service sucks balls. While our customer service team has made great strides of late, we still have a long way to go to provide the most responsive customer service experience for you. They do zero response. Zero fucking response from their customer service.
They ain't got no money to pay no customer service reps.
It's horrible.
They're paying for you to. They're paying for you and every other motherfucker under the sun to take 15 children to go
see the movie, motherfucker.
I mean, that's like the thing is like, we've been talking about this model since it became a thing. It is not fucking feasible. Like
I know. Now it's feasible when
the rules are you can't watch anything you fucking want to watch, so give us $10 and eat a dick.
And they're like, still buying movies from like Sundance and shit, putting it in the theaters. Like, and they're horrible, stupid films. Oh, and I kept getting emails like, you need to go see this. Why the fuck would I ever want to see that trash? I
want to see goddamn Guardians 3. Wait till you get the email where they're like, if you don't go see this, you don't get to have movie pass.
Yeah, there's that.
Somebody got to go see this shit.
I love that. It's like, finally, we want to be transparent as we can with these changes and any future changes, blah, 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 blah. So it's some bullshit. Now, here's the thing. We theorized together, and this is back when Chris was here, and he was on about it too. We theorized that...
Who?
We theorized that they could sell their data, right? Because you know my age, you know where I live, you know, I'm pretty sure you got all my demographics on file, and you know what movies I'm going to see and how often I'm going to see it. So that is fucking gold in your pocket right there. And then I forget the name of their parent company, but it's a big research company. Well, there's the obvious path right there, right? And they've just fucked and fucked and fucked and fucked and smoked all the meth and drank all the crack and whatever the fuck
Holy
you do.
Shit, they sound awesome. Dude. I want to party with them.
So Saturday after that happened, before this email came out, my wife, I won't go to a movie on Saturday. It's not to do with movie pass. It's to do with the crowds. I just won't do it. But my wife looked at some kids film that came out to take the kids, and they had put out premium pricing before all this happened. So before they had the outage, they'd already said there's going to be some Cody Finger show times that will have a red check. And the red check means it's going to cost you immediately $2 to $3 extra for that ticket. So like you'll swipe your movie pass and you have to agree to the fee. So when you agree to the fee, they take $3 off your card that's on file. So now you've paid your $9.99 for the membership plus an extra $3 for that ticket. And she said on that Saturday, every time on every movie had red checks, every last one of them.
Whew.
I'm like, wow, this thing. And everybody I know personally who had MoviePass is now dropping it and going to the AMC A+ or just not doing anything.
So earlier in the email, you read them saying, we have revolutionized the movie industry.
That's what they said in writing.
Right?
Yes.
And they're right. Because they forced all of these theater chains to develop their own MoviePass clones and a membership system that is actually going to add value for customers because it's feasible. It's not going to be as cheap as $10 a month. I mean, I don't believe any of those programs are that cheap. But the ones I've seen, like from AMC and a couple of the other like Regal, they seem solid. Basically, they're better than where we were a year and a half ago before MoviePass was even a thing, before it was a glimmer in anybody's eye. So, I mean, you're right. You revolutionized this for everybody else, but you done fucked it for yourself.
Yeah. And that's kind of like saying the cancer research scientist kid got a special brand of cancer and that pushed forward cancer research for years for everybody else. It's still a bad thing.
Right, yeah. It's like, well, thank you for your contribution to science, but... Yeah. Holy shit, it sucks for you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And it sucks for your customers. Let's be real. Like, you know, you're not going to get – I mean, you – let's put it this way, though. Let's be real. You've gotten more than your money's worth up to this point.
But
somebody like Joe, for example, there's people who could have opted in for a year like a month ago, and they're not going to get their money back. You know what I mean? There's no fucking way. There's no way MoviePass is going to give them money back. So – Unless a class action. But if like the company goes bankrupt, there's nothing to give. You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. And
I pretty much guarantee you their parent company has put up firewalls to keep those suits, lawsuits.
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, I mean.
But their parent company is down $150.8 million from last year. So we'll see.
That's the funding for that fucking company. Pretty much to the penny.
Shit, people actually want to go see movies? What the fuck? This didn't work out at all.
I know some cinema, but it's S-I-N-E, cinema, We'll let you do 3 movies a month for $15, but it's just 3 movies, period. Like you said, the AMC A-lister is 3 movies a week, and the fee that you pay per month goes towards your Stubbs rewards, and there's other benefits and this and that and the other. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what we're going to ride this thing till it is declared dead by Jesus himself, and it just won't work anymore. But after that happens, I don't know what we'll do.
Well, I can tell you fans what to do. Head on over to patreon.com/breakingthepanel and send Charles's kids to the goddamn movies.
That's right. That's how we should do it. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with some follow-up from other stories and some emails.
Hey guys, Phil here to talk to you about patreon.com/breakingthepanel. If you want to support the show, that's the best way to do it. We have 3 different levels over there, $1, $5, and $10. $1 is just you slipping the tip right into it. $5 gets you into the Discord so you can join the conversation and make fun of Charles right to his face. And at $10, you get exclusive content via panels, video, whatever we want to give you at $10. And the only place to get that's over at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. All right, guys and gals, let's get back to breaking the panel.
And we're back! And we got some cool shit to talk about. So James Gunn, right? We waxed poetic last week about what we believed in that whole situation.
And we're going to do it again? No, I'm kidding.
No, but we do have a follow-up. We have an email from a listener, and the thing I was waiting on, because what do you wait for in these situations when something goes sideways? The people closest to them, what are they saying and doing, especially in a situation like James Gunn? So do we want to lead with the email, or do we want to lead with the event?
Well, let's talk about what the cast came
all right,
with.
So the event. So I'll set you up, and you can run with it. So what I was talking about, and I told class, I've been waiting on this. Because Batista stepped out like day one and said, this is crap and they shouldn't do this. But I was waiting to see what the rest of the cast did, because you could just duck your head. And that's fair. You got careers to protect, whatever. You can come out with, if he's a horrible person, you can come out with the truth about that. But what they did as an entire cast together, they banded together and sent an issuing statement. So knock it out.
Yeah, so this is verbatim the letter. An open letter from the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy. To our fans and friends, we fully support James Gunn. We were all shocked by his abrupt firing last week and have intentionally waited these 10 days to respond in order to think. Well, most of us, that's my aside, because Batista
jumped out and said
To think, pray, listen, and discuss. In that time, we've been encouraged by the outpouring of support from fans and members of the media who wish to see James reinstated as the director of Volume 3, as well as discouraged by those so easily duped into believing the many outlandish conspiracy theories surrounding it. Being in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies has been such a great honor. Oh, sorry. Has been a great honor in each of our lives. We cannot let this moment pass without expressing our love, support, and gratitude for James. We are not here to defend his jokes of many years ago, but rather to share our experience having spent many years together on set making Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. The character he has shown in the wake of his firing is consistent with the man he was every day on set, and his apology, now and from years ago, when first addressing these remarks, we believe is from the heart, a heart we all know, trust, and love. In casting each of us to help him tell the story of misfits who find redemption, he changed our lives forever. We believe the theme of redemption has never been more relevant than now. Each of us looks forward to working with our friend James again in the future. His story isn't over, not by a long shot. There is little due process in the court of public opinion. James is likely not the last good person to be put on trial. Given the growing political divide in this country, it's safe to say instances like this will continue, although we hope Americans from across the political spectrum can ease up on the character assassinations and stop weaponizing mob mentality. It is our hope that what has transpired can serve as an example for all of us to realize the enormous responsibility we have to ourselves and to each other regarding the use of our written words when we etch them in digital stone. That we as a society may learn from this experience and in the future will think twice before we decide what we want to express. And in so, learning perhaps can harness this capability to help and heal instead of hurting each other. Thank you for taking the time to read our words, the Guardians of the Galaxy. And this is signed by Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Vin Diesel, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Bradley Cooper, Sean Gunn, Pom Clementif, and Michael Rooker. So pretty much the whole main cast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe Zoe tweeted out a link to a change.org petition, which honestly those really don't do anything, but the fact that she pushed that is just another active step to say, come on, Disney.
Okay, so the change.org petitions themselves don't do anything. Like, they don't force any change. But if you get enough votes on those, it sends a message. You know, so I know people think that when they go vote on one of those things, they're like, I'm going to change the world. But it's like, yeah, I wouldn't go into that thinking that you're going to have a direct impact. But you send a message, and it's a lot easier for people to digest a number like that. So let's say that a petition like that gets 250,000 signatures. Unless it was botted or something, that's 250,000 people who really cared enough to go out of their way to go sign that thing. And on some things, it's super fucking dumb. Let's be real. But on something like this, it's like those are, you know, if you get several hundred thousand to several, potentially over a million people who sign a petition like that, it tells Disney something. It tells them that the people really believe in this guy and believe that this cast wouldn't just say this. Because, I mean, let's be real about this. The whole thing with the cast coming out like this, and I appreciated that they waited time to make the statement and let things kind of like hit and let people digest it and let them kind of sit on it for a minute and think. And they're not defending his tweets. You know, some people who've defended him are like, oh, it's just comedy. And even James has been like, you know what? I mean, like we said last week, the sheer body of it, it's like, dude, if that joke didn't resonate, you beat something to death. Something, there's no horse that's ever been alive that's been beaten to death that poorly. You know what I mean? Yeah. But you tweeted at length about the same topic over and over again. But he did apologize for it, you know, and he apologized for it before he got hired to do the Guardians movies, when he realized that in order to move forward, he had to grow up, you know, his material needed to grow up. And I think stand-up community, you know, Phil and I were talking about this off air, because there was another, I forget, the other,
Sarah Silverman
got hit. Somebody found one outlier joke where she made a vaguely CP related joke forever ago, and basically, like Phil said, I mean, you can jump in if you want, Phil. But
oh no, I mean, she's not the only one who has now been attacked for jokes like this. I mean, Michael Ian Black was hit not too long after Sarah, and there's a bunch of people just scouring the internet to take down. Sure. Take down liberals. Comedians. So I mean,
liberals. Let's be real.
All right, fine. Yeah, no, that's fine. But also, it's just like Sarah has had a very long career. Mm-hmm. Sarah has said many, many fucked up things over the several year career. And it's just like, well, then what do you do with Sarah Silverman? She is part of the Disney family. She is technically a Disney princess because her character in Wreck-It Ralph supposedly gets inducted into the princess, you know, parlor in Wreck-It Ralph. So are they going to take the same stance that they did with James Gunn over one tweet? Probably not. You know, they probably
that is a significant point of this whole conversation, is that James Gunn's body of tweets for this particular topic was extensive,
but they also opened the door for this to have the mob mentality, you know,
weaponize public opinion.
Hey, look, this worked, you know. Let's take a bunch of other people out that we don't like, you know, that are vocal.
After we jump into the listener email, we have another topic that's a bit related to this. I kind of hinted at it last week. We're going to finally unpack it a little bit. That has been my concern from day one with this kind of stuff, is the weaponization of mob mentality, of you know, the court of public opinion. It's important that James's response was he accepted responsibility. He didn't flip out. He didn't respond immaturely.
Right.
He didn't condemn Me Too or any of the various movements that have to do with people getting out there and sharing their stories and everything. he basically said that, you know, he still supports, you know, those important movements that are trying to affect change in the industry. And he just accepted it. You know, he very graciously accepted it. Some would argue that he didn't really have much choice in that, but it says something, because there are people, when confronted with something like that, they wilt under that pressure, you know? And, yeah. And I referred to it earlier as a joke, but like the Kevin Spacey thing, he tried to deflect after his accusation by, you know, I choose to live my life as a gay man. And it's like, well, why, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
Like, obviously you're gay if you were accused of hitting on young men. Like, nobody cares about that, or at least most rational people don't care about that. That's not the impetus of this discussion. That is not the issue we all have. And, you know, so when you, and the other thing is, when you look at like Harvey Weinstein, you look at Kevin Spacey, these are men who were very powerful, had a lot of influence, a lot of wealth. And they could make or break somebody. They could, you know, raise you up to stardom or destroy you literally overnight. And we have plenty of stories of those people and that being done to them. James Gunn is not necessarily one of those people. And he's not being accused of that kind of activity.
Right.
He's being accused of having a lot of tasteless comments. Now, the extension of that is they're implying that he's a pedophile who's open about it. I mean, I don't know how much weight there is to that. And last week I spoke at length about how Disney was kind of in a tough bind with this whole thing. But yeah, weaponizing public opinion is really dangerous, because if every company responds to every accusation where they like immediately fire somebody within 24 hours, you can now attack people who are your competition or who say things that you don't like. You know, whatever it may be, whether it's political or religious or just somebody who's your competitor in industry or something, you can now weaponize that, and you can go after anybody you want and be like, you, I don't like you, I'm going to find something, you know, and spend a couple hours, dig up some dirt, and then make an accusation. And it could potentially end you. And sometimes some people have the power, who have had close personal relationships, which we'll talk about in a little bit, to just do that without any evidence. It doesn't even have to be provable. They just have to make an accusation, and it carries the weight that could maybe not end your career overnight, but it has the potential to do so, and it has the potential to definitely thwart it.
And we've tarnished the shit out of it.
And we've gone through these cycles throughout history. Right. I don't know what the TV show is my wife's watching. It's not Downton Abbey, but it's some other English period show that's set before.
They're all Downton Abbey.
Yeah. but the particular episode I walked through on, and it seems to be a well-done show, is this married lady who was unhappy in her marriage basically kissed this shop guy. They call him a shop boy, but he was a man. I mean, he was 30-something, whatever. But she kissed him. Well, he's the low-class guy, whatever, never to mix with the higher class, and this and that. Somehow it got found out, and of course, impropriety. So he's ruined, essentially. And if anything comes out about her, then she's ruined, whatever. I mean, it's just that somebody can say something, and just a mere accusation of impropriety on his part, and they're like, you're out, you're done, we don't care. We see it through the politics. I want to say what's popping in my head is like the 1950s and 60s, to where just an accusation against a politician, that's it. Their career was over. Didn't matter what came out.
Yeah. The Red Scare, McCarthyism.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we've seen.
Oh, you're a communist, and now you're done.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it took.
Even if you waited and defended yourself in front of Congress or the Senate hearings or whatever, it didn't matter. As soon as somebody said something and somebody else, Quitty Fingers, backed it up, yeah, you were done.
You were blacklisted.
Yeah. It's just. So many things have worked throughout history. We're just hitting that spot again with social media now, that there's something real here. The Time's Up movement, you know, it's still kind of referred to as the Me Too movement. But that's a real thing that happened to real people. What sucks is this is what happens in all of history, is you take something that's real, instead of going, we're going to treat this problem and see what this problem is and how we can prevent it from happening in the future and have clear-cut, open conversations about it. Instead of doing that, what we're doing is everybody's trying to use that power, because a problem is power, right? And being able to wield that problem is power. And they're trying to use it for their own gain. And this is one of those cases with James Gunn. There's been a few, and Aziz Ansari had that happen to him. I believe he had it happen to him. Again, I'm not on the inside. I don't know all the results. But what possibly was consensual sex that was a bad date became a hit piece against him. And he weathered that okay, but he's not doing any brand new Netflix specials right now.
No. Yeah.
He's not doing any TV series
the,
right
the
now.
The last thing I heard is that he's showing up at stand-up clubs in New York.
Yeah, you know, because he's going to do what he has to do.
Well, you got to make a living somehow, exactly. And he's probably retreated to quote unquote his people. You know, the stand-up community will. You have to be a pretty evil fucking bastard for the stand-up community to not welcome you back and try to be there for you.
Yeah,
because that speaks to something. You know, I think Phil and I have very similar feelings on this too. People who have a background in stand-up or have a background in comedy writing and stuff. You go through some dark material. You go through some dark trenches in pursuit of a laugh, in pursuit of some people, it's in pursuit of coping. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, somebody else who was recently torn down was Louis, you know, Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And the moment that accusation came out about him, I don't think there was anybody who read that and was like, there's no way. I think everybody who's watched his specials, his stand-up, who's watched his shows,
yeah,
has been like, oh yeah, that probably happened, because he's somebody who has explored his eccentricities, and I'm not at all trying to say that it's okay what he did. I'm just saying that he's been pretty forthcoming with his faults, you know, or at least his hangups. Maybe not, yeah, you know, it's. He didn't exactly replicate that situation that really brought him down, but Aziz Ansari, you know, yeah, that was absolutely a bad date, and it seems like he wasn't picking up on some cues that he really should have been. But from the, you know, from the description by the witness, she kept consenting to everything at every turn, or when she didn't consent to something, they stopped, and then things fired up. You know what I mean? And that's a situation where it's like, I don't know. The power dynamic's not fair in that situation, right? Because like, you have nothing to lose, because one, you're anonymous, and two, this person has everything to lose. And you know, and what if it were you or I out there having a bad, you know, Tinder hookup or something that just went south, we would just move on with our lives and probably like drink ourselves stupid about it, you know, and so be like, why did that? Oh my God, that was so bad. You know what I mean? So it's crazy though. It's just like, there's so much volatility right now in response to these things. Part of that is good, because you definitely want to see the Harvey Weinsteins torn down. You want to see Kevin Spacey torn down. You want to see somebody like Louis held accountable. I don't know if he should never work again. I don't know if he should never, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's where we're going with this. Is redemption possible? Or should we allow for redemption? You know, obviously if somebody actually straight up assaults someone, that's pretty indefensible, and that's probably not somebody we want to empower to move forward. Exposing yourself in front of other people, that's kind of debatable. And some people are going to be like, hell fucking no, fuck that guy. He should never work again. And other people are going to be like, and I don't even know where I stand on that. I'm kind of like, it really sucks. You know what I mean? Because he's somebody that I respected before, and now I'm just like, I got to ghost him in my life. I'm like, I can't respect that guy anymore because of this. Sucks. But that's the problem with the court of public opinion, is it's really difficult when everybody is presented one version of whatever may or may not have happened. And to roll back again to the Weinsteins and the Spaceys, there's dozens of stories of those guys. You know, there's a body of work. They've been doing that for decades. And they are powerful. That's another thing. Power dynamics is everything. If you're very powerful, it means a whole lot more when you say something untoward to somebody in a professional setting. It means a whole lot more when you hit on somebody. It means a whole lot more when you make an unwanted advance, you know what I mean, than between normal people or peons. You know, if two people who work crew on set, one of them makes a pass at the other one and it's unwanted, it's like, well, you should probably not work on this project anymore, and you should know that that's inappropriate and you should go away. But it's not like that person had the power to make or break that other person's career.
Sure.
You know, it's a kind of a completely different situation. And that's kind of some of the stuff we're talking about here. But we've talked about it at length, and I don't want to talk about it until we get to the next topic.
Because this will roll into the next thing. But Brad the Blind writes in and says, on the subject of James Gunn, you guys said everything I think about the situation. People change. From what I understand of the situation, it's not a Roseanne situation, which is true. I mean, Roseanne's was, it happened that weekend. Backlash was that weekend type of deal. Mm-hmm. The man has shown proof of change. If we go through life looking at people for who they were instead of who they are, then we'll end up alone. It's who we are now that shows real character and growth. I hope that makes sense. It's 5 a.m. I'm working on 4 hours of sleep and have not had coffee yet. Love the show, guys. Brad. Yeah, absolutely, man. That makes sense. And this next part, you're talking about bad stories and court of public opinion. I saw this on Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee with the Jerry Seinfeld show on Netflix, which is really good. Everybody should check that out. And I forget the comedian he's talking to, but they're obviously long-term friends. And this particular comedian had some hit piece put out in the newspaper about him. I forget what was said. They were generally referencing it and how he did. And what he said is important here. He said, what I thought about that story, because he never came out and refuted it. He never came and responded to it. He goes, if you care about it in a month, then we'll talk. Because that's how court of public opinion works today. I'm like, holy shit, that's the most genius thing I've heard recently. And that applies. We're talking about Kevin Spacey, right? People still care about it. And it's been months, plural, because what he did was foul and horrible. Whereas the only people probably talking about in Z's and Sorry is us, you know, because I was a fan of his. And I think he was done a little bit wrong in that sense. And so this next one, Chris Hardwick. The news stories aren't talking about him, right? They're not talking about he's being restored. They're not necessarily talking about all this other. No, we have to find it.
There's a lot of coverage.
Are there
about
some?
So, because this is very different from the other situations.
Absolutely.
To unpack the so the Chris Hardwick thing broke. What was it, like a month and a half ago?
If that, I think it's sooner.
Like, maybe about a month ago. It was about a month ago at least. Okay. And for those of you who don't know or haven't broken it down, his ex, Chloe, I'm going to mispronounce her last name, Dijkstra. Yeah. His ex from a few years ago, she wrote a blog post on Medium. She didn't put her name to it initially, where she laid out the details of a, from her perspective, toxic relationship with a guy who she described it as such to such minute detail that it could be no one other than Chris Hardwick. So she posted that, and then approximately 2 hours after it was posted, her current boyfriend, Rob,
Kaczynski.
Kaczynski. He blasted it on Twitter. And obviously people made, you know, connected the dots, figured out who it was, and a couple hours after that, she acknowledged that she wrote it, and she phrased it as she put out this little blog post. She didn't think anybody would see it, but apparently it's making the rounds, and
that's full of shit. You knew people were going
to
see it.
Oh, well, we'll get to that. I'm not going to get into every little detail of what she accounted there, but basically she said the cliff notes is they had a toxic relationship, her and Chris. He was very controlling. He liked to make his life very structured, and he wasn't very flexible, and he made her feel like she had to give up a lot of herself and a lot of things in order to keep the relationship. She also implied that he was very sex focused, and that he reminded her that his last relationship didn't last because of a lack of sex. And so she felt like she had to give consent basically whenever he showed any interest in sex. So she implies that she wasn't into it. Well, doesn't imply. She straight up says she wasn't into it very often, and that she would often just lie there and allow it to happen, that sort of thing. And she, I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but she basically implied it was sexual assault. Among some other things, like she wasn't allowed to go out. She wasn't allowed to speak in public to other people very much. Like she basically she described a situation where she was expected to cow herself.
And that is what she described. Yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Kind of your typical domineering, controlling relationship type thing. Mm-hmm. So that story breaks, and I was pretty fresh on the topic. Like I saw it go down, and we talked about it internally on the network. Like basically just about every host from every show that if you listen to any of the shows on this network had some opinion on it. And a lot of us were like, yeah, I could totally see that being the case because it just seemed plausible.
Well, the whole Starfucker thing, the whole career focused, right. hungry thing. Yeah, I get that. The rest of it was like, I don't know.
That was one of the other implications, was that he only made time for people that could potentially advance his career.
Right.
And he was so focused on work that there was not much time for much else in their relationship, which may or may not be true. And she did also acknowledge that ultimately the relationship ended when she cheated on him and he broke it off, and that she tried to talk to him a couple times after the fact, but he wasn't open to talking. And I'm sorry, I completely forgot the other big accusation is she also said that he
tanked her career.
He tanked her career. He blacklisted her within the community, within the sub community of the really nerd focused entertainment stuff. And there were a few people who stepped forward and said that they basically had been like, don't work with her. Like somebody, whether it was Chris directly or somebody else, was like, yeah, you shouldn't work with her or whatever for this reason. And that apparently Chris was pretty open about his distaste for her after the fact, and that he definitely didn't want to bump into her at work or anything like that. He didn't want to work with her, any of that kind of stuff. And she implied that it accuses him of basically negatively impacting her career. So I immediately went to the subreddit for the Nerdist, and because I wanted to see what people were saying, because I'm always curious to see how people respond to something like this. And I got to be honest with you, the initial opinion, the prevailing opinion, the most of the posts that were getting upvoted and were at the top of every comment chain were, holy shit, I totally believe her. Fuck Chris. What a monster. Mm. This is disgusting. And so a lot of various entities acted very quickly. The Nerdist immediately established that just how distanced they are from Chris. Like, oh, he hasn't been, he's not even involved with us at all anymore. And he wasn't involved with the Nerdist for the last few years of day-to-day operations when he was here. You know, we have no affiliation with him anymore. He's moved on and done other things. He's bought out of the company. We have nothing to do with him anymore.
Yeah, and SDCC dropped him shortly after that.
SDCC dropped his – he was moderating a number of panels for – this happened right before Comic-Con.
Yeah.
He dropped him.
It was the beginning of June, I think, like June 14th.
Yep. And then also
AMC.
AMC pulled his show Talking, which was about to – they were about to air an episode with Donald Glover – because this was right around the time after Solo had hit and after This Is America had hit. So Glover was going to be the perfect, kick. I think it was going to kick off the new season. Was that first episode with Glover? But he got pulled from everything to do with AMC. Basically, every single project he was involved with either got shut down or he got pulled off of it immediately. And it was very sudden, within 24 hours to 48 hours on every single instance.
Yeah.
And then, the thing is, I kept following it. And I'll be honest, my initial impression was that he sounded like a scumbag. He sounded like an asshole until people started digging through stuff. And they started digging up Chloe's post history on Reddit, interviews she had done, all kinds of different stuff where in the past she had pretty much always contradicted her story of their relationship and him. She had acknowledged that it didn't work out. Chris had talked about it on the Nerdist show a few times and some of the other podcasts, I guess. And he had at times acknowledged that things weren't really healthy between them and that, ultimately why it didn't work out and everything. And he had made some jokes, which could be construed as being, pretty rough. But anyways, people started to unpack everything and people started to break stuff down. And one of the big things that people did is the internet sleuthed the fuck out of the way she put the accusation out there.
Yeah.
And it was that she put it out anonymously on a site that, doesn't have her name attached to it. She described him to such a degree of detail it could not be anybody else. Her boyfriend tweeted it 2 hours after the fact. And then she acknowledged it and claimed ownership of it shortly after that. So long story short, people started picking it apart and they realized that the counter accusation was that this seemed like a targeted hit. That this seemed like Chloe, for whether justified or not, went after Chris, went after him at a very specific time, which was right before Comic-Con and right as his show was coming into a new season, that seemed very strategic, and it was very clear that the goal wasn't just to get the story off her chest, because she didn't really post it that anonymously. And her boyfriend, current boyfriend, put it on blast. The other thing is people dug into the fact that her current boyfriend has histories of spousal abuse in the past, or maybe not spousal, but partner abuse.
Domestic abuse.
And that it seems really weird because he's such a staunch supporter of her and everything. I'm going to leave it up for the audience to make your determination if you want to dig into it and everything. But in the weeks after, first, initially, his current wife, Lydia Hearst, and her mother, Patty Hearst, of the famous Manson situation, came forward and basically put out statements where they said, we completely support the Me Too and other movements like it. People, you know, survivor and victims of abuse should be listened to and given an opportunity to tell their story, and it should be taken seriously. In this case, we don't feel like this describes Chris at all. The Chris we know, this isn't him, so on and so forth. This is not, and Lydia was like, this isn't the relationship I have with Chris. He denied the sexual, he released a statement the day after, he denied the sexual abuse accusation, but he did acknowledge that they had a toxic relationship towards the end, and you know, that it was not working out, and that they were both guilty of some nasty stuff, I'm sure. I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
Yep.
But also since then, pretty much all of his high-profile exes have all released official statements. They waited. They all waited a while, but they all released statements where they're like, you know, I was with Chris for a while, and he never exhibited these traits that as described. This was not the Chris that I know. Some of them are still very friendly with him. They're still friends. You know, they're relatively close contact. And they're like, and they expressed all that. So basically a bunch of character witnesses came forward. People who have been in relationships with him, who have been close to him, came forward. A handful of people spoke out against him. It was mostly stuff around the industry stuff. You know, the like, yeah, I heard him shit talking her, and I heard, you know, I've never liked him or whatever. Like there's one person who's kind of podcasting royalty in particular that got really vocal about his distaste for him. But I just feel like a lot of that was just they've had bad blood for a long time, and that happens. Long story short, it was complicated, but basically it sounded like there might have been some truth to the fact that when he talked about her to people in the industry, he was honest about his feelings. You know what I mean? The accusation that he ended her career or hurt her career, that doesn't seem to hold much merit because people have basically broken down that he doesn't really have that power. He's not, you know, the head of a major studio or production company or anything like that. He doesn't have the clout to end somebody's career. He's kind of like a gatekeeper and a poster child for the geek in entertainment industry. But that's about it.
And you know what I mean? Let's be real. Any of us, if we're working in a place, so let's just take Giant Size Team up for as small as it is. If Paul was dating somebody, and we're like, this is a cool person, and they start doing stuff to help the network, this and that and the other, and then there's a bad breakup. I mean, that's just human nature. If you have the limited power to say, look, you got to take me or them, because we both can't be together, you're going to say that. Because you're going to want to look out for your own interest. You're going to be bitter from the breakup or whatever, if it's a bad breakup. Sure. That's human. So any of that tanking of her career, any of that shit talking to her in the office, that just could be human nature. And if he truly said, I don't want to run into her in the hallways, who truly wants to run into their ex in the hallways who broke up the way they broke up? You know, I agree with you. He's not the mogul maker.
And some of the people who had like been like, yeah, you probably shouldn't work with her, like that had been told to them. Some of them came forward on Twitter and they were like, yeah, I said, fuck that. We're going to work with her anyways. That just proves that he didn't have the power to stop people from working with her. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no way. But yeah, anyway, so that gets us to present day. And again, some of you might be listening to this and be like, oh, fuck her. That's your position to take. I don't know the whole situation from her end, what she's trying to accomplish. Some of you might be listening to this and being like, oh, fuck him. He's a monster. That's your position to take.
Yeah.
I'm just going with what I will say that I was talking about the subreddit earlier. The tone in the subreddit has shifted completely to the other end of the spectrum. Most of the posts are largely positive and support of him, and a lot of people feel really vindicated right now because he's been reinstated. Ultimately, the news item here is he's been reinstated on a number of his shows. He got Walking Dead back. He's going to co-present with Yvette Brown.
He got his NBC show back.
So he got his NBC.
He's back on major network.
Yeah, all the AMC stuff came back. Well, and the big thing with the AMC stuff is they reinstated him for all of his projects there. And they said that they hired a firm, an investigative firm that is good at this stuff. They're well renowned for their ability to investigate in these kind of issues. They did what they consider to be a conclusive investigation that found no evidence that would keep them from moving forward with their relationship with him. Which leads me to think they probably found that there's probably some interpersonal shit between them, but that there's not really anything actionable, that there's no proof behind.
And there's no crime. There's no,
right. There's no
despicability, no moral crap.
Yeah. And probably no abuse of power or anything like that. Cause I'm sure if they found him literally going at length to try to thwart her career, I feel like they would immediately distance themselves from him and be done with it.
Yeah. But we got one more thing to hit because I gotta.
Yeah. So that's where we're at on that. We waited forever to talk about it.
Yeah.
Phil, do you have an opinion on all this?
I don't care. I stopped. No, it's fine. I mean, I stopped listening to the Nerdist years ago because it got bored. Oh, yeah. I was bored of it. I don't like The Walking Dead because it's the same plot over and over. So I'm not gonna watch a show talking about a show that I fucking hate. I mean, I like to stand up. And real quick before we finish, you know, I threw him under the bus right away. Say that right away.
No,
me and Paul got on the phone together. And we were just like, yeah, fuck that dude. But yeah,
dude's a fucking monster.
I can see that. He's a monster. But I mean, now it's just like, I mean, great. You know, it's shitty that it's happened. He still hasn't put out an episode of his show, Idiot, you know, since this broke. He hasn't been on Twitter since this broke. He did his first television appearance not too long ago. I hope that his career is not tarnished too much where he can't get it back up and running.
Right.
But I'm indifferent because I'm not a fan of him. But at the same point, like, I hope this also sticks where, you know, let's check some facts before, you know, we get our pitchforks and torches.
Well, I think one comment that I saw from a lot of people was they were like, they really felt like AMC did the right thing where they're like, we're not firing you. We're going to suspend you from the projects you're associated with right now. We're going to hire an outside firm to investigate this, and we're going to make a further determination based on the results of that investigation. That seems to be the most appropriate way to handle something like this. Does it suck that somebody's project will get put on hold or they'll get pulled off their show or whatever it happens to be? For a moment in time, sure. But at the end of the day, that's probably the best way for a major studio like this or a major network to properly approach the issue and give somebody who makes a claim, give that claim
proper
legitimacy, give it proper hearing, and do everything they can to vet it and try to investigate and find out what the real truth is and then move forward based on that. In this case, they didn't find anything conclusive that led them to think that there was anything actionable.
Yeah, right, so. Disney? Sorry.
All right, we got one last thing you want to talk about. Extinction on Netflix, Paul.
Yeah, just briefly. We don't often get a lot of extra time to talk about stuff that we're reading, watching, playing anymore. But I want to talk about two things. First of all, playing. If you want to hear me talk about Marvel Strike Force, tune in tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or FTH Beyond, where we will be Charles-less, so it'll be infinitely better than it normally. No, I'm kidding. Where Kurt and I will just jump on the game for an hour and a half.
Well, you got some new content.
You got a bunch of new stuff that dropped in, so you'll be good.
he said not caring.
In mobile gaming, one of the games I talk about quite a bit is Final Fantasy Brave Exvius. I've been playing it for 2 years. It's currently in its second year anniversary. Woo-woo! And the big news is, finally, after a 2-year wait, starting tomorrow, Final Fantasy VIII finally comes to the game.
Oh, nice.
Squall and Rinoa will be available on the new banner. It is a gacha game, so if you're not into that, you know, just mosey on. But I really do think that Final Fantasy Brave Exvius is a great game. They're also going into the future with a 6-star awakening to 7-star, which means everything is going to get crazy and nothing matters anymore, and it's just nuts. But yeah, Extinction. Last night, I watched Extinction on Netflix.
Yeah, man.
And I want to take a moment to just drop down on my knees and worship Netflix for what they are doing for hard sci-fi these days.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away any of the plot points of Extinction, but I love the fact that Netflix is doing what sci-fi, the network sci-fi, did at one point in giving a home, giving a platform to science fiction content that is great. Extinction is very clearly relatively low budget, but it's a good story. It's a good classic sci-fi story. It's interesting. It's compelling. The people who are in it are great. Michael Peña is the main character. Lizzie Kaplan is his co-star. They're both great.
It's Carl short Lucas film. Is his boss.
Oh, you're right. And that was the other thing is, yeah. What did Mike you Colt say?
Carl Mike Lucas. Colt,
yeah.
Who's Carl Lucas? Luke Cage, bitch.
No, I know. Mike Coulter was in it. And so if you take various snaps at moments in the film, you would think this is a weird fucked up MCU thing.
Yeah.
Because you would have, you know, Michael Peña and Mike Coulter on the same shot. But basically they're in it. It's a relatively short movie. It's only like a 90-minute movie. And it was great. It's not amazing, but it was fun. It was good. It was heartfelt. You know, it's meaningful because it explored a topic that I care about, one that shows up. The way I like to think of it is I was thinking about it earlier in the show today. I felt like it was an extended episode of Black Mirror, even though it's not associated with Black Mirror.
It's not as dark as Black Mirror, but I get what you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty fucking dark, though. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I guess. I was thinking more Asimov.
Jesus. I don't know if I could watch this.
It's worth your time, and it's not a long film. Like I said, it's only about 90 minutes, so... You're out of it almost as soon as you got into it.
Yeah, but we'll talk off show about something about Extinction. But now I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
Maybe but you basically, should get together and do a Patreon episode on it.
Jesus, I really just wanted to talk about how Netflix is doing a really great job. There's lots of other stuff on there that I just haven't watched yet either. Because I saw that there's another post-apocalyptic movie somewhere. Not that Extinction is necessarily post-apocalyptic. It sounds like it is, but it's really not. There was another interesting I saw there was like a – almost like a Ready Player One type thing that they did where they had like a girl that was on – you know, doing stuff in VR online. Maybe it's not my cup of tea because I didn't click on it right away, but it seemed interesting. Basically what I'm saying though is Netflix is doing good work. They are, I think, the new platform for science fiction to move forward, like to a place to see interesting science fiction stories and see them done well. And so I am really happy about that because sci-fi keeps making fucking Sharknado movies.
Yeah.
Shit like that, which is fine if you're into that.
It's evolving past that now.
No, it's not.
It kind of is. I mean, you have shows like The Expanse.
Oh, yeah. You have like WWE Raw. That's right. I forgot. I'm sorry, Phil.
Oh, Jesus. but The Expanse isn't on sci-fi.
Sorry. That's Syfy. I'm talking about. I thought you were saying sci-fi as a genre.
No, yeah. Syfy.
No, Syfy. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you're not wrong because, I mean, especially with how big Stranger Things has been for them. You know, you're getting a whole younger, new audience into some weird, you know, sci-fi, you know, Lovecraft-esque themes. And I'll have to watch it. I normally don't watch things, so I'll put this on a list.
You don't even have to unwrap this.
Yeah, I was like, you don't even know what to do. You can't buy it and own it and not watch it.
My fat ass
can
just sit on the couch and yell into my Comcast remote, and it will do it for me.
You don't even need a jimmy cap for this one. No raincoats.
Oh, come on. Those are for sailors.
All right, with that, we got to get out of here. As we've said through the show, patreon.com/ breaking the panel. You can email us like Brad did, BTP at giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in boy, T as in Tom, P as in...
Tell me how wrong I am! I dare you!
At giantsizeteamup.com. What else? Facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Anything else, gentlemen, before we get out of here?
Don't forget... Sorry. We're good? Don't forget to catch us at DragonCon.
DragonCon!
We will have a panel at DragonCon. We'll try to stream that. There will be other things with people from the Giant Size Team Up Network on those panels at DragonCon. Charles and I will be presenting a number of panels at DragonCon. If you are in the Southeast U.S. or planning to make the trip to DragonCon, if you are outside the Southeast U.S., come see us. Hit us up on social media. Let us know where you're going to be. We'll tell you where we are at a time that you can come meet us and say hello. We'll shake your hand. We'll give you a hug. We'll take pictures, and we'll thank you. And if you're a Patreon... Yeah. I'm not going to make those promises publicly, but we'll love you.
Oh, I'm a patron.
Well, you can buy me a beer, Phil.
Well, I guess you and I are just sharing a bed then, Phil.
Well, come find me on DragonCon on Friday. I will be in full Mario cosplay for the entire day.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Go up to every Mario and just say, are you Phil? And
Phil?
If you can find me, I'll let you buy me a beer.
Wow, same.
All right, check out GiantSizeTeamUp.com for botched and all kind of other awesome shows, including our own, right over there. Check it out. We've got awesome stuff going on. We'll be back next week with more great news and fun shit to talk about.
How does it feel that Teen Titans Go to the Movies is the highest rated DC
movie in Ohio? Oh, I wanted to send that meme to Paul so bad. That was like Rotten Tomatoes side by side. Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, and Teen Titans Go to the Movies has the same goddamn Rotten Tomatoes score.
Teen Titans, go fuck yourself.
I'm just saying.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.